The topic is lame bullshit excuses. And what does that mean? Lame bullshit excuses actually should be self-explanatory. Number one, they're bullshit in that they're not really for real. They're kind of contrived. And they're lame in that they really don't work, just like a lame leg. You know, you can drag it around, but it doesn't do a whole lot of good. Lame bullshit excuses are the tool of choice for posers who, instead of turning in sales, which, by the way, is not easy to do, decide instead to generate endless streams of lame bullshit excuses, which actually gets real easy to do, especially the more you do it. Any possible excuse why a sale can't be made, they'll grab onto it. They'll say, okay, well, here's why I don't have a sale today. My car broke. This or that, blah, blah, blah. You look at the situation. Let's say you want to get drive from Los Angeles to Miami. Either you end up in Miami or you don't. That's the objective. There are different routes you can take. Some more efficient than others, but you know, it might be a preference. There are actually an infinite number of wrong ways to try to get there. You can go north instead of east. You can go south and end up somewhere down in South America. You can go west and start swimming to Japan. I don't know. So in sales, there's like usually one best way to make a deal happen. There are a number of ways usually you can take to get there. And there are basically an infinite number of ways to screw it up. Let's look at a few examples of lame bullshit excuses. Salespeople all want really big money. They want a big upside. But what they don't want to do is take the risk, so they want some kind of a salary. But on the other hand, they want a really high commission rate. The two don't go together. If you're going to get a high salary, you're not going to get a high commission rate because you're no longer taking the risk. Taking no salary, you should and could demand a lot higher commission rate because you are taking the risk. Same thing with leads. A lot of people don't think about this, but if you're given leads, if someone else is doing all the legwork and generating leads, and all you have to do, you know, is do the sales process, and about half the work is done for you, then you can expect to get paid a lot less. I mean, ultimately, let's say you go on order fulfillment. You pick up the phone. Hello, Time Life Books. How may I help you? How many books would you like to order today? You take an order. It's like working behind the counter at McDonald's. What are they going to pay you for that? The answer is nothing. They basically made the sale. All you're doing is writing up the order. Or if they generate leads by advertising or direct mail or whatever method, they're coming in. That's great. But you're not doing a lot of that work. So what they use is an excuse, well, I don't have any leads. Therefore, this company sucks. This job's no good because I don't have any leads. Ignores the basic principles of economics. What do you mean they don't have them? Did they promise you as part of your deal that you're going to get leads? Was that part of the contract? If it is, it's reflected in your pay. If it was promised to you that you're going to get leads, then another lame bullshit excuse is, well, these leads are no good. By definition, when a salesperson says, these leads are no good, what he or she is saying is that the only lead that's good is the one I closed. All the rest of them, the leads were no good. In other words, they don't want to take responsibility for their own failure. It's the lead's fault. Again, a lame bullshit excuse. It's an interesting scene of Glengarry Glen Ross in the movie. He goes, these are the Glengarry leads. These leads are like gold, and you're not going to get them because if I gave you these leads, I'd be throwing them away. You wouldn't know what to do if I gave it to you. These leads are for closers. You may remember that saying. And that's the truth. These leads are for closers. A company would be stupid to give leads to people who can't close. If I gave leads to someone, they all came back and they couldn't sell any of them, and they say the leads are bad. What do you mean the leads are bad? These are people who had an honest interest in the product. That's all you need to do. You got your foot in the door. That's usually the hard part. That was generated for you. Now your job, of course, was to do all the rest and get them to buy. Any step along the way, you can't do a proper presentation. You come across wrong. You don't know how to close. You didn't ask for the order. Whatever it is, you screwed up. It's not the lead. Let me come to one of my all-time favorites. The price is too high. Okay, let's talk about price. There's a certain cost of doing business. The product costs $1,000, and you're asking $2,000, and then you have $1,000 markup, which then again has to cover sales commissions and whatever. So you have a margin. So let's say that I sold the product for $1,000 because you can't sell, so I lower the price. If we sell it, then we break even. Nobody makes any money. How about if I sell it at $500? That means we're losing money. At what price will the product sell itself? For most products, there is a price that you can reduce it to. Like if you have a car and you're really stretching it, you know what I mean? You bought it for $30, you drove it for a year, you want $28 for it. It's a possibility on some cars that are in demand you can get $28. But you're going to wait a while. That car is going to depreciate while you're waiting. But somebody might just give you that $28. It might sell a lot faster at $26. But it still might take a while because $26,000 is still a lot of money. There's a lot of cars to choose from out there. You're competing against not only all the used cars, but all the new cars as well. They offer financing and all kinds of perks. Maybe if you reduce the price to $15,000, people will beat a path to your door because now it's almost like a steal. There is a point where you can reduce the price where it'll probably sell itself, but there's a lot of products that even then that won't happen. There's software products that are very complex. They're not really aware of what to do with a product like that software. And it involves them changing their behavior and their business and training people. Even if the software is free, they're still going to incur a cost. So that software, the price might be very arbitrary. It might be worth $1,000, it might be worth $50,000. What does it do for the business? It doesn't really matter what it costs to develop the software. And of course, the incremental cost of software is usually zero. Once you develop it, it just matters, you know, transmitting online or putting on a DVD or something. What is it worth to the business? You know, what can they do with it? That's relevant to what they should be selling for. If you reduce the price to half, if instead of 50, it's 25, or down to 10, or down to 5, it would not sell itself. People will still not find out about it. They still won't understand it. They're still not going to spend good money, and they're still not going to change all their behavior without being highly motivated to do so. So in that case, lowering the price is irrelevant. Salespeople who use these lame bullshit excuses, what they're saying is that they want the product to be easier to sell without them having to work hard or master the sales process or actually be a good salesperson or a closer. They want, so they use that as an excuse, and of course everybody, oh yeah, price is too high. Because what are we all trained to think? Oh, look at that car, price is too high. Almost everything you look at, oh, gas, price is too high. Look at that house, price is too high. That's their first reaction. Anytime you have a car, they come, I don't know, your price is too high. You can have a car for $10,000, it's worth $20,000, and the first thing out of their mouth is, I don't know, will you take $8,000? They've just been trained in a horse trade to negotiate. Prices are totally arbitrary. There are no firm guidelines how you set price. The only price methodology that is real is called market pricing. You price the product to what the market will buy. There's a supply and demand curve. If you have a flexible price, flexible demand curve, if you lower the price, the volume might go up, in which case you have to look at the total gross revenue to the company versus cost and optimize your price equilibrium point between supply and demand, where it optimizes your profits. But in most cases, something like software, you're better off just having better salespeople and doubling your price. Your costs stay fixed, and your profits go through the roof. Because it's hard to sell anyway. It's hard to sell at 20, it's hard to sell at 10. So if you can get 20 for it, that's the price. That's the price it should be at, because that's the price that person decided. At this price, I'd rather have your software than the $20,000 I have in my pocket. And beyond that, at that price, I'd rather have your software than anything in the world I can buy for $20,000. That's a high bar. You're literally competing not just against other products and not just against the theoretical value of the money, but against everything else that money could buy. And at that point, the customer trades the cash for your product, and you have a sale. That's the bar. That's the price. Usually depends on your ability to create value and to explain the value and what the implications are for integrating their product, your product into their business. How can you transfer enthusiasm and let them see the creative, compelling vision of the future and how things will improve if they buy your product? That will create more value than another product feature will. Which leads us to the next one. Product lacks some feature. You know, what the engineers do is they love playing with toys. Almost all software is overly complicated because once they develop the basic software, they start adding on bells and whistles and little features that are obscure. Some are very useful, but then they become more and more diminishing returns. In other words, I'll add another feature and that's nice, might add 5% more value to the product. And I add another feature, might add 3%. Then I add another feature and it's so obscure that it literally doesn't add really any measurable value to the product. Yet they keep doing it because they have to justify their existence. They can fix bugs in the code, do patches, or they can develop new features. Which one do you think is more fun? If you were a programmer, which one would you rather do? Creative work, coming up with new feature ideas and writing new code, or fixing bugs in some old code and possibly code you didn't even write? There's nothing more irritating and excruciating than fixing bugs in code. Nobody likes to do that. They'd rather have software, for instance, with 10 more features but all of it buggy, then perfect the code they had and forget those 10 features. And any time anybody else adds a feature, it's like a war that escalates. Well, they have nuclear weapons, so I need nuclear weapons, right? And they have 20, and I need 30, and they have 50, I need 100. Mutually assured destruction. So what happens in these software companies, they have a features war. They add more and more useless, senseless features so they can say they have 89 features and their competitor has 62, so some moron who decides based on feature count. Then you have products like VCRs and then digital cameras and all these other devices that nobody knows how to operate. They're so complicated and they have so many features. They're so obtuse that nobody could figure out what to do with them. And that was the end result. So to say that my product doesn't have a feature that one has may be factually true, but be completely meaningless. And actually, it could be a benefit if you were to spin it the other way. You could say, look, we purposely didn't want to put a bunch of senseless features in here, so-called, that make the product so complicated nobody can use it and the code's not reliable. Would you have reliable code that's easy to use, or 20 more features that you may need 19 years from now? So to say that you use an excuse, our product lacks features a competitor has, is at best disingenuous and more likely idiotic. And if you use it as an excuse, not only are you going to be an idiot, but you're not going to have any money in your pocket either. Prospects are too busy. Oh, really? Let me get this straight. You mean you call companies up that have money, therefore they must be in business properly because they're generating money. Otherwise, they wouldn't be a viable prospect. But they're busy, and the reason you can't sell is because all the prospects are too busy. You can't get through to them. Really? Is that how that works? Well, let's talk about busy. The only way your call is going to go through to a decision maker is that if the decision maker judges that of all the things that he could possibly do with his time, including all of his other work, all the other possible calls he's coming in, all the other meetings he's supposed to go to, his wife, his kids, his three girlfriends, and his dog, who's about to piss on the floor because he hasn't been walked yet. Your call has to be more important than all of those to be accepted. That's the bar. Just like if I'm asking $20,000 for a product, I'm literally competing with anything in the world that person can spend $20,000 on, not just my competitor's product or no product at all, but everything else they could possibly do. He has to vote with that money and say, this is more important to get the software than anything else I could do with this $20,000. That's the bar. That's what it's about. That's what you do all day long when you buy things. You make decisions the same way. It's called economics 101. Well, even more important in currency a lot of times is their time. You want mind share. You want their time. time is not free, so you're asking them for something. What are you going to give them in return? Is it a fair exchange? Will they value the time spent with you more than running their business? If you don't make it that way, they're not going to take your call. They're not going to sit still for your little presentation. If you sound like a moron, they're going to judge you really quick. They're going to triage their time. Is this idiot worth my time, yes or no? You have to come out of the box and make a very strong opening statement, the compelling reason why they should spend a little time with you. And the only one that works, by the way, I'm not going to get into a separate topic, the only one that works is something about them, not you. If you start talking about you, you're done. You're done and you're dead. You have to be about them, right out of the box. That will capture their attention. Then, as you move along, you can sneak little things about you in there. So again, prospects are too busy. So what? So what? Like I said, quit sales or get a job in an 800 number order fulfillment desk with the rest of the clones. Number 426B. Sit down at your desk and shut up. I'm going to time every one of your calls. You know, on your last year, a mean call was 1.36 minutes. You're only allowed 1.34. You better get it. You know, make these calls a little shorter. Actually, time every one of your calls. And that's your life. You have to raise your hand to go to the bathroom, by the way. And for all that, you'll make $15 an hour. I can't get past the gatekeepers. Oh, really? What does that mean? That means someone's job is to protect the time of their superior who's paying them to do so. They're just an intermediary. If you can't convince the gatekeeper that the CEO's time, whatever you're calling, is better spent talking to you, then that's it. It's the same thing if you're talking to him. You should very easily just prove it, that the time that they would spend with you is worth more than the time they would spend doing other things. There's a very high yield for the dollar. And make them your ally to get through. So to say you can't get past gatekeepers is to say you can't sell. That's what that means. Not everybody can sell. Maybe you're miscast as a salesperson. Like I said, maybe you should open up a flower shop. Let someone else sell at the front. You can be the back snipping roses, whatever they do. The economy is bad. Well, what a wonderful universal excuse. Oh, the economy is bad. Even in an obvious prosperity period, people will still blame the economy. Oh, the economy, this thing. You know, it's hard to make a living nowadays, and things are expensive, and so what? Well, a lot of people want to buy the same thing, the price goes up. So what does that mean? So what? Make more money. You don't like the price of gas? Buy a smaller car, get a motorcycle, walk, bicycle, or make more money. Or shut up. You know, stop wasting money other places. Stop going to Vegas. The economy is bad. It's a beautiful excuse because obviously you can't do anything about the economy. Therefore, you're instantly off the hook. You found the excuse that'll justify every element of poserdom you own. Any aspect of you that's a poser is now instantly justified. Throughout every bad economy, there's people making money. There are people making money right now, writing up mortgages. They're selling houses. Just because house sales are down 15%, the other 85% are selling. Just because mortgages are way down, there are still people doing mortgages. Just because car sales are down, there are still people buying cars. You ever play musical chairs? And you stop the music and everybody looks for a chair, except there's one fewer chair than there are people. 8 chairs, 9 people. Guess what? You're the one left standing up there looking like an idiot. That's you. You didn't grab a chair. So, you're that sales are down by a ninth, you're the ninth. You didn't get one of the other chairs. Get the deal. I'll compete the other person a little bit. Find a way to make it happen. Let's face it, if you're going to do it anyway, if you're still going to be a mortgage broker, even though the mortgage thing is really bad looking right now, then figure out a way to make money. Do a different kind of deal. Or get another job. Quit. Do something better. But to use that as an excuse, you still need to pay your rent. You still need money coming in, right? So if the economy is bad, do something about it. Make a decision. Either figure out a way around it, deal with it, or quit. Do something else. Either way, to use that excuse, so what? That's like saying, well, it's cloudy out today, so I can't sell. It's cloudy out. I can't sell when it's cloudy. Move to Arizona. Okay? Go live out in the middle of the desert. That's it. Or shut up. Get out of Seattle if it rains too much. You don't like rain? Get out of Seattle. What do you mean it's cloudy? So what? What does that have to do with anything? Pick up the phone, close deal. Cloudy, late, early, whatever. Our company is not as big and prestigious as the other company. All right? You know, I'm writing code, but we're not Microsoft. Our companies, you know, there's a bigger competitor out there. So, oh yeah, they all know that, but they never heard of us. Yeah? All right, so I understand that. Now what? You can go work for the bigger company and be a clone there, and the opportunity is not going to be as great because they're already on top of the world. What do they need you for? Or you can go to work for the lesser-known company and make it better known, make it successful, and have a better upside for yourself because you're taking, in effect, more risk. That gives you, should give you a better negotiating position to ask for more money because you're not the established leader, which makes a lot of easy sales happen. When you're the big established player, a lot of people will buy because it's called the safe choice. They used to have a saying about IBM back in the day. Nobody ever got fired specifying IBM. So everybody else that tried to sell against IBM had this, the blue monolith up there, this huge company that dominated the whole industry. And all the purchasing guys say, you know, I'm really afraid if I buy your product, you know, I can get fired if it doesn't work. So they lowered their price, they added more features, they had to figure out ways around that. Well, how many other computer companies have been there, have done that now? Digital equipment, company after company after company made it work. A company called Salesforce.com, guy left Oracle, decided to do CRM software online before everybody else had online software. And Larry Ellison probably laughed at him. Anybody have any idea what Salesforce.com is worth now? Well, I know we're not Oracle, right? But anyway, it happens all the time that one of the smaller players became the bigger player, like Southwest Airlines. Came out of nothing. And there's example after example. That's where opportunity lies. So what you do is you find reasons. We're more responsive. We have more personal service. We're not some big faceless company. Your business means something to us. What does it mean to them? You're just, you know, you're customer number 50,006. With us, you're everything. We're going to treat you that way. A lot of people, that argument appeals to them because they want more personal service. We're more aggressive. We're more responsive. We'll customize the product. We'll throw this in. There's all kinds of ways around that. But to use it as an excuse, again, what was the name of your job again? Oh, yeah, sales. Not enough training. Okay. Not enough. What does that mean, enough? There's the word. What does enough mean? Enough to make sales easy so you don't have to work. So you get to sleep in late. Can't close a door, let alone a deal, but that'll be enough. Training is wasted on posers. Number one, they don't listen. They don't think they need it. Maybe they're just too stupid to grasp it. Too lazy to pick up a phone. What's the point of being well-trained? How much training do you need to watch television instead of getting on a phone? It's possible you don't have enough training. Instead of using it as an excuse, you go to your company and organize a training call. You get together as reps and say, let's put together a self-training curriculum. Let's work with each other and start training. Let's petition the owner to fire the boss who can't train or to bring in a professional sales trainer, any number of things. You could fix that. The difference on this call, as far as this call goes, is that you don't use it as an excuse not to sell. What you do is a workaround. My manager is incompetent. Well, almost all of my managers in the past, virtually every last one of them, matter of fact, except my first one, that guy wasn't incompetent. Ed Thomason, wherever you are, the guy was a genius. Allen Test Products in the 80s. He was just a real wheeler dealer. That he may be one too. So he was great. The rest of them were complete idiots. One position I had, after I was there for a few months, I was like the number one guy. He told me to go pick up someone from the airport. I was a commission only rep. I go, what do you mean go pick them up to the airport? Why should I want to do that? Well, I asked you to do that. I go, why don't you pick them up? Sure, I get paid to pick people up from the airport. I'm not doing your job for you. Well, you can't talk to me like that. I go, well, now you're wrong again, because not only am I not going to the airport, I just did talk to you like that. Now what? He he threatened to go to the VP of sales and get me fired. I go, fine. You go tell Linda that you're about to fire 5% of the company's gross revenue and see what she says. 2 months after that, I made the trip early, the annual trip to Hawaii. And while there, they asked me when I saw this guy, I said, this guy is a complete idiot. And if I was you, I'd fire this moron. And so they fired him. He was gone a week later. So my manager was incompetent. I got this guy fired. He's out the door. And I didn't want his job, by the way. I don't know who got his job. I actually transferred from Michigan to Colorado right after that. But he was fired. He was an incompetent. He was an idiot. He was totally useless. He did nothing for me. So what I told him, I said, you can't do nothing for me. Nothing you can teach me. You're not helping me close any deals. So if I was you, I'd stay out of my face. So I'm making money. Just stay out of my face. Don't talk to me. That's what I told this guy. That's the beauty of commission-only work. Especially when you're a prima donna, you know, if you're booking deals, you can act like one. So what? Your manager is incompetent, so now you're going to be incompetent. Well, my manager is incompetent, therefore I don't have to sell anything, so now I'm incompetent. Okay, that works pretty good. The only problem is you're not going to make any money or you're going to get fired if you do that. Or my manager hates me and he plays favorites. So what? My manager hated me, and I was definitely not his favorite, and yet I was the number one guy in the whole country, and I got his ass canned. I just told him, get out of my face. I don't have time for your petty games. These guys got time to play politics. Now it's out there closing deals. Their politics made them no money, did not protect them from being fired or from leaving that company or just floundering there because this manager liked them. And when that manager got fired, guess what? Their ally got fired. So they were left sitting there high and dry, obvious posers, and they were winnowed out later. So I don't care who's favorite, so I'm not playing that game. This is not a salaried big corporation, Fortune 500. Political kind of a scenario, and when you're in commission-only sales, you don't need to care about that stuff. Company is mismanaged. If the company's that mismanaged, you should quit. You shouldn't hitch your wagon to a mule if you can hitch to a racehorse. Right? Don't work for idiots, because that makes you an idiot. But don't use it as an excuse to sit there and just not make any money. If you can't fix it, quit. The commission rate is too low. Well, commission rate's too low. Well, then why'd you take the job? You know, you entered into a deal. This is the rate. This is what you have to do for your money. This is what you get paid. There's two things you can do. If you're worth more money, you can prove it. Go ask for more money. If they don't give it to you, quit. But the odds are, if they don't give it to you, it's because you're not worth it or because it's not economical for the company to raise the commission rate. Because they all want to hire good people and attract good reps and make sure they're all happy. So they probably, most people, will set the rate too high. What happens in the real world. In lieu of being a good manager, they simply put a bunch of money out there. In the long run, the reps are worse off because the system doesn't make them any sales. What's the point of getting 20% versus 10% if you don't make any sales at all? It's a moot point. You're better off getting 10% and having everything structured so you can crank deals on all day. Anyway, what I like to do is open this up for discussion for any other lame bullshit excuses I may not have on my list that we can discuss.
Pretty good list, Paul.
Thank you. You know how I got that list? It's called, you know, well over 20 years of field experience. You know, you keep your eyes open, you can learn a lot in that length of time, right, Jim?
Yep.
I just took notes, you know, had it in my head and felt like this thing wrote itself. Almost every one of the chapters in my ebook I wrote in less than 5 minutes. Most of them. Some I didn't, but a lot of them just like, boom, it's almost like they were channeled. So is there anything on this list? Leads, the leads are bad, prices too high, prospects too busy, can't get past gatekeepers, bad economy, our product is too expensive, we lack features a competitor has, we're not as big as them, I'm not getting training, manager's incompetent, playing favorites, company's mismanaged, commission rate's too low. Anything else, yes? Remember what I said at the beginning, I wanted you to think. Now is your turn to think. Come up with something I didn't.
Our competitor can do it for about $200,000 less.
Our price is too high. That's all that means. I already did that one. I'm talking about excuses that reps use. In other words, they're presenting excuses for not performing. So I know they sound like objections, and in a way it's closely related to objections. But this is a little bit beyond just a simple objection. It's like the rep has literally bought the objection and internalized it. That's what's going on here. They internalize the objection, and now they own that objection instead of the sale. That is now their objection. So when they call a prospect, they're just waiting for the pro. Well, how much is it? Well, you know, the price is like $450,000. How much? It's $50,000. Oh, that's a lot of money. Oh, I know it's a lot, but it's really worth it, you know. Because he internalized the price is too high. Otherwise, he would have said something like this. Well, how much is this? I would, pro-offered, I would say, well, sir, does this product look like it could be a benefit to your business? Yeah, I guess so. I bet you're curious how much it costs on this product. Well, yeah, I am. Well, I'm save that for last because this is the good news. The good news is that I know we figured this would probably be worth about $500,000 a year to your business as far as improved efficiencies and cost reductions and this and that. Is that right, sir? Yeah. The good news, we're only looking at a $50,000 one-time fee for this product, and that's it. Isn't that amazing? Well, yeah, that's pretty good. I bet you're curious how we're able to sell this product for that low amount. Well, yeah, how do you do that? Well, here's the way it works. When I'm working with a company like yourself, obviously successful, and we're implementing this product, what we try to do is make them so happy that they want to give us the names of three other companies who can use this. So our marketing costs become really a lot lower. We're not talking a lot to a bunch of wannabe companies who are maybe good. I get known good companies that are viable, professionally run businesses, and we get them from the only people who really know, which are other competent professionally run businesses like yourself. So in exchange for this low price, all I'm asking for you to do is to steer me towards three people that might also want to take a look at this. Is that agreeable to you?
Sure.
Yeah.
I can do that.
Well, then there we go. So what I'm going to do next, Steve, is this. We have an installation date opening for Tuesday, May 6th at 10 a.m., and that's when we're going to install your software for it. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to send an email with all the instructions, including how to, you know, set up the payments and all that. I'm going to send that over to you, and then I'll have our finance person give you a call, and we'll make the logistical arrangements. That sound good, Steve?
Let's go.
Okay, that's what a close sounds like. So I took the same so-called price objection. What did I do? I completely reversed it. I'm so convinced that my product is going to make them money that I'm happy to tell them. In fact, that was the good news. I was happy to tell them that. And that was a positive spin on how to handle a price objection. I should probably do a whole hour and a half just on price objection because it's just so much fun. I love it. When someone tells me, your price is high, I literally would rather talk to them than watch my favorite show on TV. I would rather talk to them and overcome that objection. It's so much more entertaining. I'd rather watch that than American Idol. American Idol is funny as hell, so I love watching that show. You know what I mean? I love it. It's just hilarious. Anyway, that's how much I love the price objection thing. I live for this. If there was no price objection in sales, I would quit sales. What do you guys think of that? More specifically, what do you think of the fact that I would quit sales if that objection wasn't there? That's how much I enjoy that objection. Do you think I'm certifiable, right?
Yep.
And you'd be right, but besides the point, though. And here's why. I'm going to share this with you. My attitude going in is that I love that so much that I know I'm not probably going to hear it because of the way I approach it, but even if I did, I mean, I'm actually overcoming that objection without the objection being raised first, number one, so it's painless. And number two, it actually helps me close deals, so every time I do overcome that objection before it's raised, I'm actually closing and getting a positive reinforcement in terms of a sale. That's why I love it so much. And because it helps me focus on being not just confident, but like supernaturally confident, almost to the point of mind control. Okay? That's why I like it. Because that's the whole game here. That's what I love about sales.